Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Oh, boy. He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live! Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine, incredibly nice, pleasant Tuesday night by you guys. This show obviously brought to you in video form by PrizePick. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of free picks when you play a $5 lineup using that promo code. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about, a phenomenal day in Lakers land. Here's why. Obviously, starting with the Lakers beating the Houston Rockets to take a 2-0 lead heading back to Houston. They do that despite Kevin Durant returning play not exactly a pretty basketball game, but an effective one. So you get that going for you. The San Antonio Spurs lose in game two to the Portland Trail Blazers. And, all of the positive vibes surrounding that situation dissipate a little bit. Do hope, obviously, that Victor Wembanyama is okay. I say this as somebody who has a few concussions in my background. Those things suck. So I do genuinely hope he is okay. A team that I do not hope is genuinely, or I do not genuinely hope is okay, is the Boston Celtics. They lose to the Philadelphia 76ers at home tonight. So if you're looking for, like, what would a perfect Tuesday in the playoffs look like, this, my friends, is what it would look like. So today on the show, we're just going to sit back and enjoy this, right? Sit in this, sit back, smell those roses, as I've kind of talked about. Basically, since the beginning of March all the way through this point, we're going to break down this game, some of the adjustments that we saw from Houston, some of the adjustments to those adjustments that we saw from the Lakers, some of what we might be seeing here moving forward in this series from both of those teams. We're going to talk about some individual performances, right? Kevin Durant returned and looked really good early, but really kind of faded over the course of the game. So we'll talk about the impact that some of the Lakers wings had on that situation, as well as obviously the situation with that bone bruise that he has going on in his knee. We'll also talk about some of the Lakers performances, right? Where once again, LeBron James, I thought, just thoroughly dominated this basketball game, whether he had the ball or he didn't, whatever big play needed to be made. Whenever the Lakers needed to be calmed down, I thought LeBron stepped in, handled that situation really well. Also helped that he got help from Marcus Smart, from Luke Kennard. And just a phenomenal game here for the Lakers. The vibes, they are immaculate. Before today even started, right? The Denver Nuggets, they lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves, which is always something that I kind of enjoy here in Lakers land as well. Solid 48 hours or so here for the Lakers, as well as, by the way, if we have some time, we'll update you guys on some of the reports about Austin Reeves' situation, Luka Doncic's situation, and how the Lakers are handling all of that. Absolutely loaded show. Let's dive right in. A quick reminder, please do hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on those notifications, not just for YouTube, but for this channel in particular, so that when we go live, you know when. If you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get those podcasts, preferably on Odyssey, but wherever you get them is perfectly fine with me. And then also a quick reminder, we had some technical difficulties as far as like airing the latest Great Western Forum pod. If you want to check that episode out, it is on Jovan's channel, Buha's Block. So you can check it out there. And then I had to like go live and recorded a quick intro for it. It is sitting here in this channel as well. I thought it was a really fun conversation that I thought hit on some talking points that lent themselves really well to the run-up to this game and then potentially for the rest of the series, as well as the rest of the playoffs and then into the offseason. So check out that episode that is with Pete of obviously the Laker Film Room Pod and Jovan of Buha's Block and then myself. A lot of good stuff there. And then, the plan as far as the rest of the week goes, this here episode today. Today is, well, I'm recording right now technically on Wednesday. But the plan is to probably have Raj on tomorrow. I'm going to talk to him, see if he can. Harrison will do the show on Thursday, and then I'll talk to Pete about potentially doing the show on Friday. Playoffs, man. All right, let's dive on in. All right, so today here in Lakerland, and then for those of us who have Laker interests, right, really fun day as you watch the Boston Celtics fall to the Philadelphia 76ers, who happen to be playing without Joel Embiid. You had the number two seed San Antonio Spurs fall to the Portland Trail Blazers as well in the run-up to this game. And then for the Lakers here, right, about an hour or so before the game tipped, we found out that Kevin Durant was going to be available for this game. I will talk about my picks here in a little bit for Prize Picks. Kevin Durant was, I believe, one of them. I'll have to check. Let me see. We won, so that was fun. No, yeah, he was not. I stayed away from KD in this one. But I think it's a good thing that I did, too, because I think it's like his points that I was going back and forth on was like 23.5 or 24.5, and I stayed away on that one. But KD does play in this one, does make the start, and plays 41 minutes coming off of the patellar bone bruise that kept him out of game one. And in those 41 minutes, he scored 23 points, grabbed 6 rebounds, dished out 4 assists, had a steal, had a block, did have 9 turnovers in this game, which I think is... I don't know that I would go so far as to say like it is definitely not going to change moving forward, but I do think his turnovers are a direct result of the roster construction and lack of coaching creativity that the Houston Rockets are kind of saddled with. But KD, 7 of 12 from the field, 1 of 4 from three-point range, 8 of 9 from the free throw line in this game. And, early in this game, it was very clear how big a difference having Kevin Durant was for the Houston Rockets and really throughout the game, right? In those minutes that KD was not in the game, you could tell that, you know, the Lakers saw it as an opportunity to really, you know, take hold of the game and try to expand their lead or whatever. You saw the Rockets kind of look at like, all right, when's he coming back? Can we get him back out there? Can we like we need our engine? And so Kevin Durant really is that stabilizing factor in terms of on the court presence that the Houston Rockets desperately needed in game one and got for chunks of game two. What I did, where I do think that you could kind of draw that line is like the difference between Kevin Durant and LeBron James in this game was like, you could just tell the ways that the Lakers really kind of are drawn to LeBron and the communication that runs through LeBron and the productive conversation and the pointed conversation, right? The conversation with a purpose that takes place here with the Lakers. And you compare the Lakers, and it's funny to talk about this given the way that I've talked about it over the course of the season, but you look at the Lakers culture in this game, right? Their huddles, their, you know, between play conversations, their conversation on the court during play. And you compare that to the Houston Rockets, where like at least a couple of times, maybe even a few, you would see, you know, they would show the Rockets sideline and it would either be a lot of people just kind of like staring off into the distance, or it would be just actual arguments taking place on the sideline, which, look, I always think that the way that people talk about arguments on the sideline is always kind of overblown. But you know, if it happens a few times over the course of the game, and that's the only kind of communication that we see, whether it's from coach and coaching staff to player, or player to player, or player to coach, like if that's the only way that anybody ever talks to each other, that just kind of points to a cantankerous relationship there that you could kind of like the erosion factor there. It felt a lot like the cliff sides of La Jolla, you know, where it's just like if the wrong wave or if the right wave hits at the wrong angle of the right hill, that all of a sudden, you know, you would have catastrophe. And that's basically what we're kind of seeing here with this Houston Rockets team, that, you know, it's just kind of a matter of time till they all kind of look at each other and say, you know what, fuck you guys. I don't like playing with you guys anyway. And you know, the Lakers taking a 2-0 lead. I talked about how winning one game against Houston would kind of get that ball rolling. Winning two of them and one of those wins coming with Kevin Durant in the lineup, we'll see what Houston's response will be when we get back to Houston. But Kevin Durant's return here, you know, really tangible effect early, and then a real tangible fading to the back that we saw from KD. And I think the Lakers wings deserve a ton of credit here, where you had Rui Hachimura play 43 minutes in this game. You had Jared Vanderbilt and Jake LaRavia play 14 and 16 minutes, respectively. You had LeBron play 39 minutes in this game as well. And I thought that those wing minutes and the guys that spent time on Kevin Durant, like, it was very clear that the Lakers' game plan defensively was just where this dude down, get him tired, remind him, like bump him a little bit, make him take a bunch of awkward steps, put him in action on offense as well. KD spent some time in foul trouble in this game as well. Like, just make sure that at no point over the course of the game, whether it's on offense or defense, and fortunately for the Lakers, because of the Rockets' lack of any kind of productive culture in the huddles as well, Kevin Durant was never particularly comfortable or confident out there. And, you know, if that continues, I think we're looking at a relatively short series. Now, look, a lot of the things that can kind of go your way at home, those variables can kind of swing the other direction when you head out onto the road, and we'll see how the Lakers handle those variables swinging. But I do think it means a whole bunch to the overall health and belief that the Lakers hold in themselves in this series, that they won the first game the way that they did, where, yeah, they turned the ball over way more than they should have, and they gave up way too many offensive rebounds, but they still won relatively comfortably. And you know, you would think, all right, Kevin Durant shows up, eats into that margin for error. We'll see what, you know, comes out on the other side of that. And on the other side of that, in this case, was a Lakers win that was certainly nerve-wracking towards the end and over the course of the game. But there were also some stretches where you're like, oh, shit, the Lakers are still clearly the better team here. So, in terms of macro look at this game, and then specifically as it pertains to Kevin Durant, how the Lakers had a lot of things going for themselves in this game. I know that, there were a lot of Lakers fans who were coming into the series celebrating the possibility, maybe even the likelihood or the probability, that this would be the last 4 to 7 games that LeBron would play in a Lakers uniform. And I sincerely hope that all of the people who feel that way feel really bad about themselves, because the stuff that this dude is doing at 41 years old, when this team has zero other chance at winning this series, is unbelievable. Unbelievable. LeBron played 39 minutes in this game. Went 8 of 20 from the field, 2 of 5 from three-point range, got to the free throw line at 41 years old. He got to the free throw line 14 times, made 10 of those free throws. He grabbed 8 rebounds, dished out 7 assists, had a steal, only turned the ball over 3 times, and was a +6 in this game. Over the course of, again, 39 minutes. He started the game at various moments guarding Kevin Durant. He was in passing lanes. Like it was the first points that the Lakers scored in this game came from LeBron jumping a passing lane, getting a steal, getting downhill in transition, and scoring and finishing at the rim. Had his shot going. Now he had a shot going from 3-point range. Wasn't quite as effective in the mid-range in this game as he was in the first one. Nobody was as effective overall at shooting the basketball in this game as they were, you know, compared to the first game. But once again, this dude just put on display a complete understanding of what his basketball team needed to win a basketball game. And it's so fun to watch a team that has the level of belief in their best player that the Lakers currently do in LeBron James. It reminded me, frankly, of what we were seeing from the Lakers in March, when everybody fully believed in the MVP caliber level of basketball that Luka Doncic was playing. And at that time, you had LeBron filling one of the 3-and-D roles, and that's why the Lakers looked as good as they did. But in this case, whenever LeBron was on the court, and whenever, you know, the Lakers needed to get a bucket, or whenever they needed to get a stop, or whenever they needed some kind of a run, there was just this confidence that you sensed from the guys who were on the court that, you know what? Yeah, like, it sucks that we gave up that 15-point lead. We should be up by way more going into halftime than we currently are. All right, fine. We'll punch them in the mouth at the beginning of the second half. And they did exactly that, right? Like, they, you know, it was kind of went back and forth, and then boom, you know, 6 to 8 point lead there in the third quarter. And they kind of sort of kept Houston at bay from that point forward. And it just had everything to do with LeBron fully understanding what Houston was trying to accomplish on offense, fully understanding what Houston could not stop the Lakers from accomplishing when Houston was on defense, fully understanding the kinds of looks and the spots on the court that the Lakers needed to get to fully compromise Houston's defense, and just going to work. And him being able to do this at 41 years old, I know there's like till the day we die, there's going to be this debate over who's the GOAT, who's number one, who's number two, who's number three. And I'm not sitting here saying that a first round game, you know, in a playoff season or a postseason that the Lakers are probably going to be eliminated in the second round for, like that would somehow dictate that this guy is the GOAT or whatever. But what I will say, though, is that like what I will confidently say is that I don't think anytime soon we're going to see somebody at 41 years old be able to go out. And remember, the conversation about this postseason, this series going into it, was if the Lakers are going to win, it's because LeBron's going to dip back into postseason LeBron. And the fact that like Lakers fans, any Lakers fans, myself included, had any semblance of confidence in this Lakers team had everything to do with a 41-year-old LeBron James. That was insane in and of itself. To now arrive at two games in and have that confidence rewarded to the extent that we have seen it rewarded over these first couple of games, it's just ridiculous. It's truly unprecedented. And honestly, we may never see this again. This is the kind of thing that, like, when it was funny, my son Miles came out tonight about halftime, and you know, he has this trend recently that anywhere between 11 and like 1 in the morning, he'll come out and he either wants to chill on the couch, or he wants to lay down with us, or he wants to sit here on my lap while I edit the show or something like that. He just wants to be close to me and Jen, right? And tonight he comes out, it's like shortly after halftime, and I just say, you know what, like, yeah, you have daycare in the morning, but it's not like you're studying for a test. Come on out. Let's watch this game together. And I'm going to tell him when he is 12 years old, 16 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old, when I am 90 years old, if I ever reach it to that point, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to have conversations about the fact that, like, we got to see LeBron James fend off, not, you know, the other word, fend off father time to the extent that LeBron has fended off father time. It's just, and I know that I use that framing of this conversation, and I know that what we are seeing is so unprecedented. It's so unbelievable. What we are seeing from LeBron James is just enjoy it, you know? And I know that I say that often a lot. Like, I know you guys, I reiterate these talking points a lot, and I know that I spend a lot of time, and I have spent a lot of time basically since March telling you guys to enjoy a team that I don't think anybody truly believes is going to win a championship this year. However, what I have learned over my time on planet Earth and over my time rooting for sports is that, like, this whole championship or bust thing, like, it's not productive. There have to be things that we can celebrate in non-championship years. And the thing, or one of the things that I'm going to celebrate from this season, whether the Lakers miraculously win a championship or not, is that at age 41, when Luka goes down with a hamstring strain that may or may not have ended his season, when Austin Reeves goes down with an oblique strain that may or may not have ended his season, LeBron James basically stepped up to the challenge of the Houston Rockets with, I put some donut money on the Lakers in this series. I think I got it at like 7-1, you know, and I think it got as high as like 9-1 at one point. And LeBron stepped up to those odds and has stepped up to those odds and said, that's fucking ridiculous. How dare you? And he has been absolutely correct in telling everybody who doubted the Lakers, and him specifically, telling everybody, how dare you? And God, it's been fun to watch. Just, he has mastered the game of basketball in ways that, like, you hope to experience somebody mastering something like that, whether it's basketball, whether it's cooking, whether it's music, whatever it might be. You know, LeBron is, you know, has mastered basketball relative to his contemporaries, and it is just so fun to watch. You know what else was fun to watch? Marcus Smart's drunk ass start to the game, right? Where he starts the game with what, like 3 3-pointers right at the onset of the game. He's driving to the basket, scoring an and one on Amen Thompson. And, you know, Marcus Smart giveth and Marcus Smart taketh away, right? The run that Houston had to get back into it. Unfortunately, Marcus Smart had a lot to do with a lot of the plays that swung the game back in Houston's favor as well. But I also thought that, like, you know, obviously over the course of the game, you know, he finishes the game 35 minutes for Smart, 8 of 13 from the field, 5 of 7 from three-point range. A lot of those threes timely, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. He grabbed grabbed a couple of rebounds, dished out 7 assists, had 5 steals in this game. And given the importance of the possession battle between these two game teams, 5 steals is absolutely critical to what the Lakers are doing. Had a key block at the rim in this one as well. Did have the 3 turnovers, did have 3 fouls, but finished the game 25 points and a plus 3 overall in a game that the Lakers won by 7. And he once again, like, I think there is incredible value in having a player of Marcus Smart's ilk in terms of his personal accomplishments, right? He has a defensive player of the year win in his back pocket. He won a whole bunch of games for the Boston Celtics, played in a whole bunch of big games there as well, is never afraid of the moment. And also, very importantly here, has a voice that legitimately carries throughout the Lakers huddle and locker room and all of that stuff. And I think, you know, when it comes time for the Lakers to really kind of buckle down and really focus defensively, oftentimes it is Marcus Smart who is kind of guiding them through that vocally and reminding, you know, everybody, like, you know, how to remain on task. I thought he did a lot of that in this game again. And then on top of it, he's also producing, you know, 25 points and 7 assists. It's pretty damn good, you know, all things considered here for Smart. Now, do I anticipate that he's going to be able to replicate that performance in Houston again? That'd be great, but we'll see. I do think the Lakers are going to need more from, in terms of just raw production, from Jared Vanderbilt and Jake LaRavia. But you know, if you aren't going to get anything from those guys and from your bench overall, then it is going to take some kind of otherworldly, by their standards, performances from, you know, less heralded starters. And in this case, you had Marcus Smart go off again for the 25-7. And then you also had Luke Kennard follow up his 27-point. It was funny. I said after the game, it was like in my like walk and talk that I record for Offside, I was like, yeah, you know, a little quieter game here for Luke Kennard. It turns out a little quieter is literally just 27 points to 23 points. He grabbed in this one 6 rebounds, had a couple assists, had 3 steals for himself. So between Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard, you had those guys combined for 48 points. They combined for 8 rebounds, 9 assists, 8 steals in this game, and only 5 turnovers. And when you're looking at, like, you know, high ceiling, high floor performances, and that's exactly what you need to win a playoff game like this, where you're the underdog against a more talented team, having your backcourt combine for that stat line with that little taken off of the table as well, that's how you arrive there. So, Marcus, I thought he was instrumental in kind of suffocating Kevin Durant. Like we talked about KD's 9 turnovers in this game. Smart had what was responsible for a good few of those. Smart was also an absolute nuisance as it pertained to Alperen Şengün, who was so fucking fraudulent. Like, God, Alperen Şengün is just, I'm trying to think of like who I would even compare him to. Like, I would say he's like, I don't even know. Like, let's see, who would I compare him to? I would probably say Şengün is probably like, I don't even know. I don't even care. Not worth the energy. It'll come to me over the course of the game. Like, I'll tell you what, in the chat, hit me in the chat with who you would compare Alperen Şengün to. But Smart was instrumental in making him uncomfortable as far as, you know, the traps that would, attack Şengün from all kinds of angles. Obviously had a whole bunch of success trapping Kevin Durant in this game as well. Just kind of overall defensively, if there was a loose ball that needed to be, you know, dove onto or grabbed or whatever, Smart was there to do that, which is really important because, you know, as much as I enjoy a game like this, it would be, the Lakers would have won by a few more points if they had more guys whose natural instincts was, oh, loose ball, I go get loose ball. And Marcus Smart is one of those guys. He is absolutely critical to the Lakers' identity defensively and just kind of overall identity in this postseason run. And I think will remain critical to the Lakers' culture moving forward. And then you combine, you know, Smart's culture role production to Luke Kennard's. I just watching this guy play, I don't understand how so many teams saw that talent and either let him walk outright or traded him away, or in the Atlanta Hawks case, traded him away for Gabe Vincent's expiring contract and a second round pick that probably won't be particularly high. It's just kind of crazy that this guy has fallen through the NBA's cracks to the extent that he did. And for the Lakers, like it might complicate their offseason a little bit because he's probably going to be a little bit more expensive than they maybe budgeted for. But he's, I don't think, going anywhere. absolutely loves playing with LeBron, right? Two Ohio guys. They've talked plenty about the chemistry that they share on a basketball court together. And in terms of just production, this dude, like watching this guy go from somewhat reluctant shooter who, you know, has been accused of efficiency farming in the past, and to go from that to, he had a shot today where he dribbles up the court, his back somehow turns away from the basket, turns around, plants his feet, lets a rip, and it was Steph-ish, right? It was Steph Curry-esque, that shot, and I, you know, it made me say to Jen, I was like, if he's hitting that one, if that is a shot that the Lakers can make this guy confident taking, let alone making, then that changes the entire dynamic of what their offense might be capable of moving forward. And no, I'm not going to go so far as to say that, like, all right, well, he did that, now it's time to get rid of Austin. No, I'm saying that when you have an Austin on your team, when you have a Luka on your team, I think LeBron's going to be on the team again next year. And you add on top of that as like some kind of like allspice, you know, Luke Kennard knocking down shots like that and freaking out defenses the way that he can when he is a secondary or a tertiary option. Just unbelievable production from the Lakers guards. And you compare that directly to Houston's guards, who, like, Josh Okogie played 24 minutes, had 7 points, was pretty meh. Amen Thompson played 42 minutes in this one. I know he's technically more of a wing, but still 42 minutes, had 16 points in this one. And they're like guards outside of that. You had Reed Shepherd only play 11 minutes. He went scoreless in those 11 minutes. Aaron Holiday played 7 minutes. He was also scoreless in this game. Jayshon Tate played 9 minutes in this one. He was also scoreless. So you compare like the Lakers backcourt and the Lakers perimeter effectiveness in this game to Houston's perimeter effectiveness in this game, and it was night and day. All right. So the first, we do have a super comment. We do have several super comments, which means I get to play a couple of the most important sounds on the show, starting with the Alperen Şengün Memorial sound of the show. Unbelievable. It will never not make me laugh. Him just going down this way, just, dude, let's see if I can do it. Like him going, woo, you know, it's just so fun to watch Alperen Şengün try to keep up with. And it's crazy to say this. One of the thoughts that really kind of struck me, I know I'll get to your guys' questions and comments here in a second, but one of the takeaways that really kind of struck me over the course of this game, the Lakers athletically are keeping up with Houston in this series in ways, in terms of, like, it really helps that Houston's ball movement is pretty bad and their, you know, just kind of overall offensive organization and efficiency is pretty poor. So I think that might help the Lakers look a little bit more athletic than they actually are. And maybe that's something that, you know, will kind of shift back to what it actually is when the Lakers play, if the Lakers play OKC in the second round. But like watching the Lakers defense operate on a string, adjust to the adjustments, execute the game plan to make sure that they take, you know, various angles and plays away from Houston's offense has been pretty spectacular to watch. So that's been really fun. Now, on top of that Şengün sound, we do have the actual most important sound on the show. After that, I will dive into your guys' questions and comments. Stop watching! You know which team has two thumbs and currently sits 2-0? All right. So the first question here comes from Justin Tindall, who writes, a month ago, if you were told two games into the playoffs, if a Laker was averaging 25 points on 65% field goal percentage and 73% field goal percentage from three, Austin is playing well, LOL. Gabe is currently averaging 2.5 points per game. Yeah. What Luke has brought to the table here, and I presented that question to my Twitter following, I don't know, a week or two ago. And I basically just asked, like, how is this not known, like better known, what Kennard can do on the ball? And like, because look, if this was the Luke Kennard that the Lakers were getting when they traded for him, he would not have been available for Gabe Vincent and a second round pick. Just flat out. What Luke has brought to the Lakers, and kudos to Rob. Maybe he saw this coming. I somehow don't think so, but maybe he saw this coming. What Kennard has brought to this table or to the Lakers as a unit here, by way of his offensive production, whether that be like his own offensive production or the production that he has for others, or the gravity that he creates for guys like LeBron, for guys like Luka, for guys like Austin, the player that the Lakers got in Luke Kennard, he is worth a first-round pick. And maybe even like a Dalton tier prospect going out. And just unbelievable production that the Lakers have gotten from this guy. And like the story on Kennard to this point in his career, when it comes to like postseason production, is, well, yeah, like he starts playing, but then eventually like it just kind of dissipates and he gets attacked frequently enough defensively and is so choosy as an offensive weapon that eventually he can be kind of like played off of the court. And trust me, the Rockets are, well, take that back. I don't think they are smart or organized enough to actually attack Kennard to the extent that he should be. But like, it's in there. Best interest to play Luke Kennard off of the court, and it just hasn't mattered. And it's pretty insane that it just hasn't mattered what Houston tries to do this guy, whether it's when he's on defense, whether it's playing physically with him when he's on offense, just somehow, some way he's been able to remain a threat on or off of the ball. His production, you know, he had 27 in the first game, 23 here in this one. So, you know, 50 points through to this point in the series so far, shooting just ridiculous numbers all over the court. And the thing about, like, yes, he did have the one shot today that I spoke about earlier where, you know, it's like the step back turnaround three pointer that he knocked down that made me just kind of like, wait, hold on, whoa, that's a Steph shot over there. Like, even aside from that, this guy is taking and making shots that feel fairly sustainable. Do I think he's going to have 125% field goal percentage? Like, no, obviously not. Adjusted field goal percentage? No, I don't think so. But do I think that he can continue to have this kind of impact for long enough that the Lakers can get back and build on it whenever or if they are able to get Luka and Austin back? I think it's possible. I think it's possible. And this is like kind of the point that I was making to Pete in today's Great Western Forum, or yesterday's Great Western Forum, which was like, I don't think what we've seen from the Lakers against this Rockets team has completely changed my mind as it pertains to like what they are capable of moving forward in this postseason. However, LeBron looking the way that he has looked, Luke looking the way that he has looked, if you can just add on top of that the production, even relative production of Luka and Austin, it's an intriguing basketball team. You know, now it's you in the second round, you're playing against the worst matchup that the Lakers could possibly face. But at the very least, you know, I'm intrigued by that matchup in ways that I wasn't maybe before. And then on top of it, I think we've learned a lot about, you know, some guys that the Lakers will have the opportunity to bring back going into next season, something that I would not have been as interested in, you know, even a month or two ago. The next question here comes from Justin Tindall again. Shingun has the most empty numbers. All right, let's actually figure this out. I want to know, I'm going to roll through your guys's, you know, Shingun comps. I see some Sabonis here, more Sabonis, a lot more Sabonis. Luis Scola is an interesting one. I actually think Scola was a little bit more impactful than Shingun has been so far. Trying to think of like a super offensive one, because I think I find watching Alper and Shingun play basketball to be very offensive. He's like Big Baby Davis if Boston ran stuff for him. Like maybe not that bad. That's kind of mean. But this is a cursed name, and I might regret saying this, but like he's a little Tim Thomas-ish to me. And fuck Tim Thomas forever for the shot that he made against the Lakers. But he's in that kind of realm, right? Sabonis is a good one. Sabonis came up over the course of in the offside chat as a player comp. I think like Miles Turner. Oh no, Maurice Spates. That's like just way too much confidence. just way too much confidence, throws his body all over the place, whines about every call, just a ridiculous NBA player who I am like genuinely happy is kind of sort of getting a comeuppance, you know, in this series where he's such a clear example of the, you know, the run starts after you, you know, premise, you know, or concept. It's just, I can't, if I was a Rockets fan, I would demand that Shingun get traded this summer. Like as soon as this series is over, Shingun is on the market. Cause I do not believe in this dude as a talent. Let's see. The next question here that we have comes from Let's Run UNLV. Would love a camera on Bill Simmons tonight, who is a KD fanboy. KD has been worse than LeBron at basketball for every minute of his life. Go Lakers. I think Simmons predicted that the Rockets were going to sweep the Lakers in this series. NBA award voter, Bill Simmons, everybody. Let's see. The next one here comes from Brandon Omeng, who writes, Smith is better than Bronny. Maxey is better than Hayes. Need to limit Jake's minutes. Well, we need to see where Jake's ankle currently, like how it feels after tonight's game. He was not moving very well in this one. I also like lights are kind of bright for Jake. Now, I do want to give a little bit of not a full pass or whatever, but like I do want to give, you know, offer a little bit of bail for Vando, for Rui, and for Jake because of how hard they are playing to limit Kevin Durant. So, like, yeah, you have, you know, you have 0 points from Jared Vanderbilt and 0 points from Jake LaRavia. And Rui only had like 13 points in this one. But Rui played 43 minutes. Vanderbilt played 14 minutes. And Jake LaRavia played 16 minutes. And basically every minute, you know, so and then you compare that to Kevin Durant, who played 41 minutes. So between those wings, only 7 minutes were those guys on the court and not just solely focused on limiting one of the best pure scorers in the history of the sport, who still has quite a bit left in the tank. So I will float a little bit of bail there for Jake, for Vando, for Rui. What I will say, though, is that like as the series shifts back to Houston, I don't think the Lakers can afford to get absolutely nothing from Jared Vanderbilt and from Jake LaRavia. And then certainly after this series, if, you know, now hopefully Luka comes back and he eats into some of those minutes and Austin comes back and he eats into some of those minutes. According to Shams, the sources that he has closer to the Lakers say that Austin is closer than Luka. I personally haven't heard that, but I'm perfectly fine being wrong. If that's how this all plays out, it might also be relatively speaking, and neither guy are particularly close. But regardless, for those guys, that I do think, you know, in games 3 and 4 in the series, the Lakers will need to get something from them, whether it's getting out in transition and finishing in transition, knocking down one open three-pointer from those guys would be helpful. Just anything whatsoever. So long as they continue playing the kind of defense that they have played on Kevin Durant, which really, like, in terms of my priority list, playing the kind of defense that they played on KD tonight sits way higher than any kind of offensive production, but you do still need some offensive production. Now, as far as Smith and Bronny, tomato, tomato, Maxey and Hayes, I get it a little bit. I don't think it's a coincidence that Hayes finished this game a game high plus 12. DeAndre Ayton didn't play down the stretch in this one. I haven't looked to see what the reasoning was on that front from JJ Redick. I'll probably talk about it in tomorrow's show with Raj. But as far as, like, you know, what the Lakers have you know, kind of gotten from Jackson, it's kind of what you've been hoping for. Hasn't really caught like a whole bunch over the top. He's been kind of pushed around a little bit. I do think he has been pretty effective in just like trying to box out and let other guys get rebounds. And I think that that's why his plus minus is where it is, even though his like individual production isn't maybe where we would like to see it. I just don't necessarily think that Maxey Kleba has anything left in the tank. Now, what I would like to be able to talk about here would be Drew Timmy instead of either Maxey or Hayes, or like Maxey and or a Jackson and Timmy front court instead of a Jackson and like Jake front court or something like that. That's something that I'd be a little bit more intrigued by. But as it stands right now, I don't have too much to complain about as far as like a backup center goes in this series. Look, you compare it to the Houston backup center situation there, where like every time Clint Capella steps onto the court, all of the Lakers see a big, giant target walking onto the court. Like that, I would much rather the Lakers have Jackson Hayes in this series than Clint Capella. It reminds like Clint Capella, whenever he steps onto the court, there was a movie, Starship Troopers, I think is what it was called. Tim Allen space movie. Galaxy Quest. I don't know if you guys ever saw Galaxy Quest, but in Galaxy Quest, there's this scene where like this one alien race, you know, is there and they're observing this alien race, and initially it looks like the aliens are letting this like older alien walk in there and eat first. And the main character's like, oh my God, that's so cute. They take care of their old. Da, da, da. And then as soon as the older alien like bends down to eat, they all just start ripping at this dude. And you see like a spleen fly over here and intestines go over here. And they're all like, oh my God. Like, that's what it looks like when Clint Capella walks on out onto the court, where it's like, oh, that's so cute. They're so happy to see him. And it's like, oh my God, there goes Clint Capella's fine. You know, it's like, it's just, and that's not the case when Jackson Hayes goes out there. So, you know, in terms of which backup I would rather have, pretty clearly Jackson. Let's see. Is that it as far as super comments go? Nope. We got another one here. Justin Tyndall writes, I laughed when he's saying Şengün fouled Marcus 70 feet from the basket in the crunch time when it mattered in the bonus. So it's funny because Ime Udoka clearly doesn't trust Reed Shepherd. And honestly, I don't think he really trusts Alperen Şengün. But he has to play one of those two guys. So he's basically decided, I'm going to play the more proven guy, the bigger guy, the guy who's been around here a little bit longer. And Alperen, to this point, has rewarded him with just a whole bunch of fart noises. Like, he has been so bad in this series so far. Now, look, I'm going to knock on wood, because if he is able to figure this out a little bit more, and if he is able to just kind of, like, you know, outplay DeAndre Ayton, and that kind of changes the outlook of Game 3 and maybe Game 4. And if I'm the Lakers, I would really like to win one of Game 3 or 4 here. C Mac topping up for tally. Put a bingo. Honestly, we're good. We're set. I was not ready for that name drop there, and that is so effing good. Thank you, C-Mac. That killed me. That was amazing. Vitaly Potapenko. Amazing. All right. I'm going to go ahead and end this thing here because it is 1:42 my time. And I'm going to sit here and laugh for like the next 15 minutes about Potapenko. Thank you everybody for tuning in. A reminder, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please turn on those notifications for YouTube and for this channel specifically. If you guys are listening in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get them. And until tomorrow, when hopefully the plan is to talk to Raj about the series to this point, I am Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. It's a Vitaly Potapenko. I hope you're okay.